You are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. Up next, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. Dramatic, isn't it? A dramatic beginning for a dramatic few weeks for me. Oh gosh, thank you so much. That's obviously Skyfall, but we'll worry about that later. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. Welcome to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I'm your host, Greg Bossen, and thank you so much for listening. Today is May 19th, by the way. The opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guests, and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or even you, the listeners. So I've been gone for a while. This is my first show that I've done in the last couple of weeks. For those of you that do not know, I took ill at the beginning of May and had some pains in my side and ended up having to go to the hospital. Had my appendix out and a chunk of my colon out as well. It was awful. I got to tell you, I was in the hospital. I'd never had a major surgery before. And if you don't know me, let me just tell you, I don't do good with medicine. All right. And it was awful. I couldn't have anybody there with me. My partner checked me in and dropped me off at the door. And next thing I knew, I'm on the operating table. I was in the hospital for 6 days. I did have complications. Oh, it was just awful. But anyway, and I should have a whole show on it, but I'm doing better now. Thank you very much. It was just an infection. But don't play around with your appendix. Anyway, so I'm really glad to be back. Tonight's show, this is actually very, very cool. I ran across an article about a woman. Her name is Charmaine McGuffey. And she is actually pretty impressive. She is a police officer for the Hamilton County Police Department, which is, that, if you don't know that, that's Cincinnati, Ohio. And she has been there for 33 years. She's gay and was fired in 2017 for hating men, being gay, whatever, after 33 years of serving. And so tonight's show is about that incident and how Miss McGuffey has decided to fight back. And as a matter of fact, she is at present running against the sheriff who fired her. So to become the new sheriff, and I think she's going to get it. So I feel like tonight's show is really overcoming adversity. So I'm pretty excited about that. And speaking of overcoming adversity, my COVID update. As of today, we have 37,552 COVID cases. Of that, there are in Georgia, there are 1,609 deaths, which is a percentage of 4.28%. So that's kind of high, actually. There were 731 new cases today. So, and as we see, Georgia and Atlanta is opening up. And we'll see what happens to the cases as a result of that. But before we go any further,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what.
And we just got a couple of stories here. I'm going to kind of keep it local because I really want to get to the interview. We're going to start with kind of a sad thing. Regina Sims, a longtime mother and mentor to drag queens and transgender entertainers in Atlanta, has lost her battle with cancer just 4 days after her birthday. She was 61. Sims died on April the 26th, a little more than a week after she was moved into hospice care in Stockbridge, Georgia. The Chattanooga, Tennessee native lived in Atlanta since the early 1980s and was a fixture at gay nightlife venues over the decades, including Gallus, Metro, and Friends on Ponce. Good Lord, those are some intense bars. I remember the Gallus. Anybody remember the Gallus? Anyway, she spent her last few months living with her longtime friend and former entertainer, Kelly Princeton, who cared for Sims as her health deteriorated. The two met more than 30 years ago as they appeared in shows in LGBTQ bars and clubs. She loved everybody, and everybody loved her. So she was definitely Mama Regina to many a friend, this according to her friend, Kelly Princeton. So that's one thing, and we're just going to do one more little thing. I don't know if you've noticed, whenever our illustrious governor, Governor Camp, makes one of his announcements, which makes national news based on the lack of intelligence. But anyway, whenever he speaks, the bearded black-clad individual next to him that is signing for the deaf, his name is David Cohen, and he's actually a member of our own queer community. And he serves as this vital link for Georgia's deaf population. And so he is happy and honored to interpret messages from Kemp and other state officials for the deaf and hard of hearing. Without the service of interpreting COVID-19 information, many deaf people would be left to decipher complex English words and even new vocabulary associated with this pandemic on their own, Cohen told Project Q Atlanta, and they would be doing so in a heightened atmosphere of nerves and anxiety. I get to help make information accessible and can in turn help to calm people. So Cohen's starring role has earned him profiles by local and national media outlets alike, and a 1,200 comment Reddit thread and a random comparison to David Letterman. Kemp even singled out Cohen and fellow interpreter Aaron Shoemaker during a press conference on Tuesday at the state capitol. So that's really all I'm going to do for news of the queer. But again, first of all, thank you to David Cohen. It's cool to see one of our own serving. And it's funny, you look at those sign people, they really put a lot of energy into it. You know, it's not just the hands, it's the expressions, it's the face, it's everything, their body language, which is really, I don't know, it's cool, it's inspiring. I wish I could sign. I wish I could speak another language. Anyway, as you can tell, I'm rambling. I'm a rambling guy. But anyway, and to those of you who got in touch with me and told me that you were concerned during my time off the air while I was in the process of recovering, which, by the way, I still am, thank you so much. I really do appreciate all of the kind words. And if you are just finding out this now, hey, please find me on Facebook, gregbossen.com, and tell me that you are glad that I'm feeling better. Give me your love and affection and wish me well, because let me tell you something, I need it. That was a nightmare. I didn't care for it at all. But anyway, and we will be back right in a few minutes. Thank you for joining us.
We want to say thank you to everyone who's taken us up on a request to like WRFG 89.3 FM on social media. Just doing this one thing means so much to all of our volunteers who are doing what they need to do to keep themselves and their families safe and healthy. and still bring you the progressive information and hand-picked quality music programs you've come to expect from your independent community radio station. If you haven't liked us yet on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, please do. Our station Facebook page is WRFG 89.3 FM. On Twitter and Instagram, you'll find us at WRFG Atlanta. You'll find direct links to all three on our webpage, WRFG.org. And please tell your friends about WRFG and ask them to like us too. In Atlanta, we're 89.3 FM. You can listen to us worldwide over our free mobile app and WRFG.org.
In constant sorrow through his day.
That play forever, so I think I need probably need to shut that up. For those of you nice. That are just joining us, you are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3, Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the queer community. I am your host, Greg Bossen. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, I know I've been gone for a couple of weeks. The surgery was... I don't know. I'm probably going to have a show on it, and I'm not out of the woods yet. It's just awful. But anyway, we have a guest here tonight, Charmaine McGuffey. And say hello, Charmaine.
Hi, everybody. How are you? Hi, Greg.
Hey, how are you? All right. Good. So now, who the heck is Charmaine McGuffey? Now, Charmaine is a very important person. Now, I'm actually very excited about today's show. And you know what we should probably do is, we could probably talk forever, so I probably need to make sure that we don't do that. So okay. I'm gonna put a little bit of a timer on here. So, all right, so Charmaine is running for sheriff. Not in Georgia, in Hamilton County, Ohio. And the election is, I'm assuming, in November of this year. Is that right, Charmaine?
That's right. November 2020.
Mm-hmm. November 2020, unless, of course, the Trump administration decides to dispute the elections, but we won't go into that. So anyway, we have a woman running for sheriff in Hamilton County, Ohio. Is that a big deal? Not really. Also, Charmaine is gay. Is that a big deal? Well, not really. A law enforcement officer who's female that's gay. I mean, what a shock, right? but anyway, what makes this so interesting and what caught my eye is that last year, so in 2019, Charmaine was actually fired from the Hamilton County Sheriff's Department. And she had been working there for 33 years with exemplary service. And she was fired in part for being gay. So what does she do with this? Well, she decides to fight back. And one of the ways that she's decided to fight back is she is now running for sheriff against the very individual who fired her. And that gentleman's name is Jim Neal. And I just think that is just awesome. And so I reached out to Charmaine, and so I thought it would be interesting to have you on the show to kind of tell you your story. So first of all, thank you so much for coming on the show, Charmaine.
Thank you so much, Greg. I appreciate it.
I guess you've been doing a lot of these interviews since all of this went down.
I've done one or two. I've done a couple. Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. Have you ever been in politics before, or is this the first time you decided to do anything like this?
No, I've never been in politics. This is my first run at a political office. I made the decision about a year ago that I was going to run against the very sheriff that did fire me. And as you said, in part for being gay, and I'll explain some of the other reasons why he fired me as well. And so I entered the political arena with a campaign manager and all of the people that have been encouraging me to do this, and it's worked out really well.
Oh, really? That's so exciting. So, just for context, where is Hamilton County, Ohio? For those of us in Georgia that don't have a clue, are we in the middle of the rural? Is this a rural area or?
No. We're actually since the city of Cincinnati, Ohio, sits inside Hamilton County. So we are a county that's about 800,000 residents. And so we're quite large, and we're just across the river from Northern Kentucky. So literally, in fact, I'm sitting here in my house looking at the river, and Northern Kentucky just across the way. So we are right on the river.
So are you a suburb then of Cincinnati, would you say, or?
Well, Cincinnati sits in Hamilton County, and I actually live in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's where my residence is. And then Hamilton County encompasses some other 49 jurisdictions.
Oh, so you would be the head of, this is a big deal then.
Oh, yes, yes, it's a huge job. Yes, absolutely.
You're not, this isn't some podunk town. This is the county that encompasses Cincinnati.
That's exactly right. Yes.
Well, that's incredible. Well, you know, I always like to start in, I think I'm going to do this differently. I like to start and get like a timeline, but I think I'm going to start with, when were you fired? Let's just start with that.
Okay. So I was fired on May 5th of 2017. And, you know, it was a shock. It was a shock to me. I had absolutely no idea that that was coming. I got called into the sheriff's office, and he and the chief deputy told me that they had created a report that was not favorable to me, and that they were going to fire me. And of course, I said, well, I want to see the report. I'd like to see what's in it. And they were not even going to give me the report, amazingly enough. I insisted on having the report before I walked out of the office. And they did relent finally and give me that report. It was 100 pages that Internal Affairs had created where they brought up anybody that may have had some kind of gripe about me. And I mean, from the pettiest thing you can imagine. For instance, one of the things in the report was I didn't make eye contact and say hello to an officer that saw me in the hallway one day.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was very, that I hated men. You know, it was documented in this report that I hated men. And the reason they gave for me hating men was that I told my second in command, who was a captain, I was a major at the time. I told him, I said, I really think we should start mentoring and promoting more women to rank in this department. And that was the quote that was used to determine that I hated men and was not a good supervisor of men. So it was things like that that were in that report.
And just to give a little context, excuse me, but I do want you to cover just a little bit about your history with the department and some of the, so that we can see, you're not somebody that just popped in out of nowhere. You've been working for this department for now, did you say, was it over 30 years?
Oh yeah, 33 years. Yeah, I started as a brand new recruit in that department. We all started out in the jail. That's the way our department works. So I started out working in what was called the old city workhouse, pretty archaic place, as a corrections officer. And really, during my 33 year career, I've been in just about every facet of the sheriff's office. I've worked in nearly every facet. The bulk of my experience has been inside that jail, though. The many years that I've served. And, I was a hostage negotiator for our emergency response team for the county. I achieved rank of sergeant, lieutenant, captain, and then major, the highest ranking woman in the sheriff's office. I was in command of some 580 uniformed staff for the jail and the court services, as well as, of course, 1,400 prisoners that were under my care and custody. So I had a very big job. My career, I've had I have about 100 commendations in my file during my career. I've had a very good career, as I said, achieved rank. I ran I was the commander of our honor guard, which is a very prestigious unit within our sheriff's office, which by the way, our sheriff's office is about 850 strong of men and women in uniform. So it's quite a large sheriff's department.
What is the percentage of men to women?
Oh, in our sheriff's department, it's way out of whack. I would say 5% of our department is women. And even less than that are the diversity of color, any African Americans and such, you know.
But you rose through the ranks, and what was your, I'm sorry, but what is your highest position that you held there?
So my highest position was major. Major, which is a commander of jail and court services. And from major, just to give you a perspective, the very next rank is the chief deputy, who reports directly to the sheriff. So as the major, I had literally two bosses, the chief deputy and the sheriff himself.
Oh, wow. And the sheriff is the one position that's elected, and the rest of these are...
That's correct.
Okay. All right. And this came as a shock to you. So you've not been having, I mean, you didn't have any inkling at all that there were people that had it out for you or had a problem with you, because certainly you had encountered something at some point. How long has Jim Neal been in that position?
He's been in that position 7 years now. So when he took over as sheriff, he actually is the guy that promoted me to major. The problem, and yes, you're exactly right. I knew that there were issues, because pretty immediately I began to have very serious conflicts with internal affairs, the internal affairs department that the current sheriff put in to oversee all of those investigations. And when we talk about internal affairs, for everyone, that's any officer misconduct, internal issues and so forth within the sheriff's office that need their attention, if they're criminal or not, or what have you. So began to have serious disagreements with them over the use of forces. Number one, they were not holding officers in the jail accountable for what, I mean, serious use of forces against prisoners. I mean, use of forces that were putting prisoners in a hospital. So I'm not just,
oh my gosh,
black eye. I'm talking about serious incidences that were reported to me initially as accidents. And then when I looked into them, they were not accidents at all. And internal affairs continued to exonerate officers, create what they call the one punch rule, which was you could punch a prisoner if you thought that prisoner was going to be aggressive with you in some way. You could have a preemptory first punch. And I'd never, I spent my career in that jail. I know that that's absolutely an extremely dangerous and poor policy. So I immediately brought that to the table, my concerns to the sheriff and chief. There were also female officers and women, female inmates, who were being sexually harassed by male officers, and those male officers were not being held accountable appropriately either. So I also brought that to the table, complained that that was absolutely not going to happen under my command. And so, yeah, I knew this was coming, because I was ruffling some feathers. I was told to be quiet. I was told to go with the flow. I was told to stay in my lane.
That's yeah. So it sounds like you got promoted, and then you started ruffling feathers, and then for the last 7 years, it's been an issue for you.
Yes.
But you've chosen to stay in over those last 7 years. You chose to continue to.
Well, my tenure actually lasted 4.5 years, so almost 5 years I was there. And you know, I did choose to stay because I love my job. I've loved every job I've ever had in uniform, and I'm really good at my job. And I want to say this. There are a lot of officers and supervisors in my command who are excellent people, who really want to do a good job. And when I took over that jail, by the way, it was rated the worst jail in the state of Ohio. And that's the third largest jail in the state.
Wow.
I took that jail over, and in just 3 years, that jail achieved a rating of the best jail in the state of Ohio. So, you know, we were doing a lot of work with changing policy and procedure and working to get all of those initiatives in line to make us the best operating jail in the state of Ohio, which is what I did. I also brought in reform because I'd been watching that 1950s model of incarceration for so many years. And what that means is, you know, people get arrested, they spend weeks in jail before they can even ever get to court to see a judge or anything. And while you're in jail, you can lose your car, your housing, your job. We separate you from your family, your friends. You know, you're completely isolated on this little island. And then when we open the door to let you out, we tell you, you know, now go out and do better with less. And that never made sense to me, right? So wait a minute. So I began changing that model immediately. I created a committee whereby what I did, basically, I like to tell people is I filled in the moat around the castle and dropped the drawbridge and put the welcome sign out, right? So I wanted agencies to come in and tell us what we didn't know. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, people came from all over the tri-state. And I even had former addicts, I had formerly incarcerated people who came in, and through those meetings and all of those initiatives, we came up with the Women's Heroin Recovery Program, the Veterans Men's Program, and a program called the Exit Program for men who have like 3 months or less on their sentence. So that what happens in those programs is we house like prisoners in like places, and then we target services to them. Not just counseling. I mean, counseling is wonderful and it's great, but when you get out of jail, you have to know how to get your driver's license back. You've got to know if you can get a job. I mean, you may have to get your record expunged. There are a lot of things that have to now happen to get you moving. And we started achieving such a great success with the Women's Heroin Recovery Pod because, you know, that's a scourge of the nation right now.
Right, right. And this was in 16 or 15, I guess you were doing that?
Yeah, this was in, we launched that pod. It took us 2 years to build it because you can't just let anybody in your jail. I mean,
right.
Really vet these people and programs, and it has to be done very professionally and thoughtfully. And so it was in, actually, yes, the beginning, the end of 15, it was 2016 when we actually launched that program. And we were achieving such great success with that heroin recovery program that the Attorney General's office came down to preview it from the state of Ohio because they had heard about it and heard how successful it was for the women that were housed there. So, you know, there were a lot of things that I was doing to work my life's work, you know, what I enjoyed and what I was good at.
Right, right. All right. Well, for those of you, we're going to take a quick break here, but for those of you that are just joining us, you are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. And we are speaking with Charmaine McGuffey, who is running for sheriff of Hamilton County, Ohio, as the Democratic nominee. Charmaine was removed from the department after over 30 years of service, in part for being gay. And her Republican opponent in this upcoming election in November is Jim Neal, the sheriff, who is the one that terminated her. Yes? Did I say something
actually,
wrong?
Actually, I'd like to clarify that for everyone. So Jim Neal, I ran against him in a primary because Jim Neal had run as a Democrat.
Oh,
I've been a lifelong Democrat. I was born a Democrat, much to my family's disappointment. I've been a lifelong Democrat. He was a fake Democrat. And so I ran against him, and the primary just wrapped up here in May 6th, and I actually prevailed over him by 70 percentage points.
So let me just, so primary. He's the one who is the sheriff.
Yes.
He's ran as a Democrat. He's been a Democrat. You've already beat him, so he's out.
He's out. He is a lame duck. He will be the sheriff for the next 6 months until I beat Republican opponent now and take over as sheriff. So I've already prevailed over Jim Neal.
Who's the Republican opponent?
The Republican's opponent's name is Bruce Hoffbauer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a former Cincinnati police officer, not at all prepared to take this position, not in any way, shape, or form. He was a former lieutenant with them and retired and is now going to run for sheriff. He hasn't been in our department. I think he spent 1 year there as a recruit early on in his career.
Is this county predominantly Democrat? You feel comfortable with your ability to get this?
Well, we are turning blue day by day. Right? We started out all those years ago when I was growing up in this county, it was so conservative. Oh my gosh, you couldn't even breathe. It was so conservative. And now, with the changing times and people, and we are turning blue, we're voting in more and more Democrats. So I'm very hopeful that the Democrats here outnumber the Republicans, and I'm going to get some Republican votes, by the way. There are Republicans out there who hear what I have to say and it makes sense to them and they want to join too.
All right. Okay. Well, so I guess what I'd like to know, I guess I'm curious because I was reading, it looks like the Democratic Party just kind of dumped Neil and threw their support behind you. Is that how that works?
That's correct. Yes.
And why did that happen? How are you able to affect that change? Or was this something that just rose up in the community? Well,
the Democratic Party decided, first of all, they changed leadership. All of these kinds of things, everything kind of happens in succession. So it builds history, I say. But it changed leadership. And the leadership of the Democratic Party then, the new leadership, said, we're going to have a committee. And those people that want to run for sheriff, these two people, need to come in and interview with our committee. And there were some 12 people on that committee represented from all over Hamilton County, mayors and so forth. And they interviewed us, each candidate. And from that interview, they decided to throw their weight, their backing, their support to me, because it was obvious from the interview that I'm the real deal and that my opponent, Jim Neal, was faking as a Democrat. And that became very obvious in that interview. And then we went to the larger body and actually had a vote. And that was quite dramatic. But yeah, I was voting on that day. It was a Saturday.
Wow. And I'm assuming your story, I mean, let's be honest, is probably part of what gave you some. I mean, I'm not saying that you're not, you certainly sound very capable. But it's nice to have a story like that, and I don't have a problem with that at all.
Absolutely. Yes, I have a story. I certainly do. Yes.
Yeah.
It's not a story that I would have intended, by the way. I didn't set out to create a story. I think when you are gay, when you do not shrink from that identity, when you expect people to accept you, particularly in this law enforcement realm, you're going to have a story. Because you are going to encounter events and pushback.
Yeah, and just to get a little personal for a second, Charmaine, tell me just a little bit about your own history dealing with your own homosexuality. I mean, when did you realize you were gay? When did you come out? Was that a tough thing for you?
Sure. Well, I did. I realized I was gay when I was a sophomore in high school. And I literally remember the moment and place that it hit me that I was gay. I was on the bus coming home from school. And the thought hit me so hard that I literally thought I said it out loud when I said, oh my God, I'm gay. Oh my God, did I say that out loud or to myself? So I realized it. And from that day forward.
Is it because you were having feelings for the girls?
Yes, it was because I was thinking about a particular person who I was so enamored with. And I had a boyfriend at the time, funny enough. And I was weighing between the two. Well, wait a minute. Who do I want to spend more time with? Who do I like more? And then that's when, she outweighed him. So I knew. And so at any rate, I then knew that I had to navigate this territory on my own. Right.
And were you scared or sad?
Oh, yes.
Or
I was absolutely, I was in shock, kind of, really. It took me literally really weeks and so forth thinking about that thought. And oh my God, I mean, because I knew that it was going to be incredibly hard, and particularly living in this town, but it's something that was in my heart. So it was undeniable. I was not going to do what I saw some people do, which is pretend and make themselves miserable and date people they didn't like. And I couldn't do that to myself. So I when I joined the sheriff's office, I went to the University of Cincinnati. I always knew I wanted to be a police officer. So I went to the University of Cincinnati. I got a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, joined the sheriff's office. And, you know, lo and behold, I end up working for the most homophobic boss in the county. Okay. His name was Simon Leese. They actually made a movie about him. He's so homophobic.
Really?
Yeah, Larry Flint. It was a movie with Larry Flint and he doing battle over the Mapplethorpe and things exhibits here in Cincinnati. Some people may remember that. But anyway, he was the most homophobic guy. So in my department, it was a military, kind of a paramilitary organization. And really the way I always felt it, you know, it wasn't like a don't ask, don't tell policy that we had. The way I felt like it pertained to me was kind of like a why ask when you can tell sort of thing. So I just motored along, you know, I kept my head down. I didn't advertise my gayness. I didn't lie about it, but you know, I had a very close friendships with just a couple people in the department. And I kept my private life very separate from my personal life or professional life. So in that way I existed. Well, and then I was outed. I was outed 10 years ago and so here's what happened. So I went to a gay bar across.
Hold on a second. Charmaine. Hold on one second. I think what I want to do, and I'm sorry to our listeners, because of Zoom and the internet, sometimes you fade in and out. So I think what we're going to do, let's go ahead and do this. And then I'm going to ask you to call in on the phone also. And then we can just do the rest of the recording from the phone, but you seem like you're back again. So go ahead and tell your story about how you were outed. And then in a few minutes, we'll make that shift.
Okay. Sounds great. So we were leaving a gay bar in Kentucky across the river here. It was, you know, early in the evening. I mean, it was about 11 o'clock at night. It was dead. It was just a dead Saturday night kind of thing. It was raining and we were walking to our car in a crosswalk and we were in the middle of that crosswalk and all I hear is someone screaming at us. And it was a man's voice and he was screaming, drop it now, you're under arrest. And you know, to me being a cop, I'm in the middle of the street, I thought I was gonna get shot because those are gun words. So I'm looking around trying to figure out what's going on. There's no cars, no people. And I finally look over and I see these two police officers angled up at the bar door about 40 feet away and they're threatening to arrest us. And I immediately, of course, recognized that they were targeting the bar. So I did. I yelled over there. I mean, it scared the hell out of me. I have to say it that way. And I yelled over and I said, hey, I said, you guys are targeting a gay bar and that's not right. And then I said, you guys should find something better to do with your time than target a gay bar. And with that, one of those police officers, young police officer, great big guy, came running over to me, ran that distance and threw me to the ground, jumped on my back, put his knee in my neck, handcuffed me, and announced that I was under arrest. And, you know, it was my friends, we were all just so shocked and stunned by it. And it was interesting because my friends then proceeded to tell him that I was not only a police officer, but I was a captain in the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office. Well, once that was found out, and it was also found out that two of the women that were with me were also police officers in other police departments around the tri-state, I got to tell you, it looked like a murder scene. I mean, they didn't know what to do. They called it in. The captains came, lieutenants came, the cars and the lights and I mean, it was crazy. And they weren't sure what to do about it because they knew that we knew that was an unlawful stop. And those guys slammed me on the ground for no reason.
Oh my God.
So I was eventually unhandcuffed. And eventually after an hour or so of debate and everybody, the captain approached me and told me that they were going to write me some citations. They were going to let me go and write me citations. And the citations were one, menacing, 2, disorderly conduct, and 3, public intoxication. And I tell you, the thing that irritates me the most about that is that public intoxication, because there was absolutely no indication that I was intoxicated. But anyway.
What does menacing mean, though?
Well, I mean, right. He wanted to charge me with assault. Originally, he was going to charge me with assault, and they knew, wait a minute, that's really outlandish. So it ended up being those 3 tickets. I informed my job the very next morning, as per policy, that this had happened and this what went on. What happened is, in the next few weeks, is those tickets and everything went away. They were dismissed. And the record was expunged, and I mean expunged in like record time. But I had, of course, had to report it to my department. So my boss, whose name was Sheriff Simon Lease at the time, my boss decided that even though all of that went away as if it never happened, he needed to discipline me for conduct unbecoming because I was in a gay bar. And
what year is this? This was
10 years ago. It was 2013.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. No, it was 2000. It was 2010. Yeah. It was 2000.
Oh, well, that's completely different then.
Yeah. There you go. It was 2010. And so I was disciplined. I was given 5 days off of work, because I was in a gay bar. And it is, I like people to know that that is the only discipline I have ever received in my entire career, my entire 33-year career. It's the only discipline that sits in my file. And of course, here in my hometown, my opponents have continued to beat me up with it, right? I'm this horrible, horrible person. And, you know, look what I did as a police officer. But I tell you, those guys were doing the wrong thing, and at some point in time, you just have to stand up and say so. So I'd do it again tomorrow.
Definitely. Definitely. Wow. Well, I mean, I'm blown away and impressed and inspired, which is, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, because, you know, your story is inspiring to me. And I just felt like it was something that other people should hear. So with that, we're going to take one little break here. And during the break, I'm going to ask you if you can you can keep this, but just go ahead and call in on the phone number as well. We'll make sure that it works. And then we will be right back with Charmaine McGuffey, my hero.
The coronavirus pandemic is forcing us to go through some of the biggest changes of our lifetimes. It's going to take all of us working together to get this virus under control and our lives back to something near normal. We here at WRFG think it's important we not buy into internet rumors and promises of miracle cures. When you hear something that's too good to be true, we encourage you to check multiple sources you trust to make sure you know the facts. One good resource is the World Health Organization's Mythbusters page. We've posted a link to it and to other coronavirus resources at wrfg.org. In Atlanta, we're 89.3 FM, your independent community radio station for progressive information and hand-picked quality music is streaming worldwide over our free mobile app and wrfg.org.
I hear the drizzle of rain, like a memory it falls.
All right, Simon and Garfunkel. Apparently I'm feeling very mellow tonight.
Classic.
Yeah, for those of you that are just joining us, you are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. This is Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to the issues affecting the queer community. I'm Greg Boss, and I'm your host. And we are nearing the end of a fascinating discussion with Charmaine McGuffey, who is presently the Democratic nominee running for the sheriff of Hamilton County, Ohio. Charmaine was removed from her the Hamilton County Police Department after over 30 years of service, in part for her being gay. And but now she has come back and come back strong, and she is going to be the Democratic nominee, and the election is in November. So we just have a few minutes left, and we kind of went off into tangents and stuff, which I'm glad because I like to get the history. But going back to what happened, so is there any reason why you think that they picked that particular time in 2017 to say is enough and enough is enough and get you out? Because it sounds like you were doing a lot of good.
I was very successful. The community, the tri-state area, was very happy with what we were doing and what was happening in our jail and in our sheriff's office. But what happened was it was the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back with a particular use of force that happened. And as I described, the use of force was very serious, reported to me initially as an accident. When I investigated, it was not an accident. I insisted that the officer be criminally charged because it was on video, quite frankly. The entire thing was captured on video. There was no question as to what happened. The administration, the sheriff, refused to do that. And that became a very strong point of contention between us. And, you know, again, as I said, Internal Affairs found a way then. I'm sure they'd been trying to find a way to get rid of me. And they found a way to do that by creating a report that said I was hostile to my officers in my command. I was hostile in my command. And again, one of the things they noted in this 100-page report that they created by bringing up select people who didn't like something I said or did, they noted that I was one of the sergeants noted that I was pro-lesbian. That was another reason I was fired. I don't exactly know what that means, but I was fired for it.
To me, it's like saying you're pro brunette or you're pro blonde. Right. You know, it's like it just is. You're not really for or against it, are you? But apparently, there are people that are against who you are. You know, but
right.
So, but it, now, do you think it's coming particularly from this Jim Neal, or do you think there was multiple people that wanted you gone? Oh.
It was definitely the men in the command staff. Jim Neal is the kind of boss who, in my opinion, is pushed around quite a bit, did not stand by me, didn't have the backbone to stand up and say, listen, she's doing a great job. I'm not going to entertain these things that you're bringing that aren't even, you know, validated and aren't true and that kind of thing. Instead, he folded to the chief deputy, who's his second in command, who recommended I be fired, along with, of course, Internal Affairs. And so, you know, there were certain men in that command staff that decided I had to go, and the sheriff and Jim Neal folded on me.
Wow. So, Jim himself wasn't exactly the impetus behind this so much in your view. He's more like a passive. You know, just a passive participant in a way, which kind of speaks to his ability or lack of ability to be a leader. But what did you do immediately following this? This happened in 2017, and then how long before you decided? What did you do initially?
Well, I then filed a lawsuit. I contacted one of the best labor firms here in Cincinnati. They engaged my case, and we set about filing a lawsuit, which is, if anybody's done that, I don't recommend it. It's incredibly stressful and expensive and what have you. But I do have a case. I have a very solid case. I have documentation and so forth. So I've been working on that case for a year, really, working on all of the documents and the things that need to be done in that lawsuit, which is still ongoing, by the way. And I decided then in like the end of 2018 that, you know what, I need to run for sheriff. I can do a better job than him, quite frankly. I mean, I had to use that year to really get over the shock. It was very traumatizing, quite frankly. I mean, it was rough. It was hard. But you know, I knew that I wasn't going to step out of the ring, and it wasn't going to be a knockout punch for me. I was going to continue to fight my way back. So that I decided I can do a better job than him, and I set about setting that up and getting that going. And fortunately, I have a tremendous amount of community support. You know, people that really wanted me to run. So they got right behind me, and I ended up with 70% of the vote for the primary against Jim Neal. So,
yeah, no, that's what was the participation like in that primary? Was it bigger than usual, or?
It was not as big as it normally is, only because we had to delay it with the mail-in ballots only because of the COVID-19.
Right.
But I got 55,000. I got 55,000 votes. So
wow,
you know, and Jim Neal got significantly less. I think it was like 21,000.
Wow,
yeah.
that's awesome. And I was looking on your site. Some of the endorsements that you have. Top of the list is Gabby Giffords, which I think is awesome. And it looks like you got a lot of members of the city of Cincinnati Council. So it looks like you got a lot of people on your side. So that's really great.
And it speaks to reform, and it speaks to how Cincinnati is changing, and we are going to be a diverse community here. We're going to accept, and we're going to reform our criminal justice system, and we're going to be a community that is progressive and is doing the right thing for everybody. So.
Yeah. When law enforcement or incarceration, there seems to be this idea, well, this person broke the law, and so therefore whatever happens to them, they deserve it. We don't want to spend any resources, any time, any energy on helping this person at all. And it ends up coming back and biting the community in the butt. Because, as you said, the person, either we spend, you know, millions of dollars basically feeding, clothing, and sheltering these individuals, or if we try and get them out back in society, without the tools to be able to succeed, then, you know, they're not going to be able to contribute, and they're going to end up being a drain again. So, you know, I don't know, unless you want to go around shooting everybody that does something wrong, you know, I don't know what to tell you. It's like, you know, there's what you might seem as fair, I guess, but then there's, you know, what's really in the best interest of everybody. So it's exciting to have somebody in you that, and a lot of this doesn't have anything to do with the fact that you're gay. You know, this is just a general, you know, progressive idea. Conservative gay people, you know, you just don't happen to be one of them. So in the last few minutes, I guess I just want to, you have a real strength in you, a real confidence and a real strength. And I wonder where would you say that comes from? Is that something that you developed over time, or is that something you feel like you've always had? And did that come from your family? And, where has your family been with all this, your family of origin?
Yeah. Well, thank you. So I grew up with a single mom, single parent, and two sisters. And my mom was very self-sufficient. My dad was out of the picture pretty early, and she raised us by herself. And I tell you, she was a phenomenal woman. You know, we didn't have a lot, but we were very rich spiritually and emotionally. And we had a very strong female figure to follow, and that was my mom. Her nickname was Birdie. She lived to 97, by the way. And so we grew up next yeah, we grew up next door to the three boys. And really, we lived there so long with those boys that were about our age that it seemed like I had them as brothers, right? And I played a lot of sports and so forth with the boys. I was very good. I'm very athletic and played a lot of, you know, sports in my day. And I just learned. I learned that I came up learning that I could play just as good as the boys. And I hung around with boys a lot in my lifetime. And I learned that not to be intimidated by them. And certainly my neighborhood I grew up in, I was an at-risk kid. I mean, we were in a neighborhood that, you know, struggled for sure. So I learned to make my own way. Mom was gone quite a bit. Our neighbors helped us, you know, school helped us and that sort of thing. So yeah, I just learned that if you're going to get it done, you got to do it yourself. And you can't listen to all the noise that's out there because boy, there's a lot of noise.
Yeah. Louder than ever these days. Shockingly.
Right.
It's like we've taken we've gone backwards in time. It's just insane. What's been going on? Did you hear what happened in Georgia with the gentleman, the black individual that was shot?
Yes,
he was horrible. Just running, and horrible. these two guys just shot him, and he wasn't. They weren't arrested until last week, and this happened back in February.
And again, it's exactly what I fought against. Is this, you know, a culture of let's sweep it under the rug because, you know, we're wearing a uniform or we're connected police departments, so we're better and we can do these things. I mean, not every officer feels that way. Certainly most don't. I mean, we have a lot of great, great police officers out there. But, you know, there are guys that I know exactly who those guys are. You know, I know exactly, you know, who they are. What they were thinking and kind of how that played out just by being in the business for so long.
Is that deputy still in his position?
No, that deputy ended up being allowed to resign from his post after a year. And interestingly enough, the FBI, because he was never criminally charged for this, the FBI stepped in after I was fired and actually charged this man with a civil rights violation, charged the deputy with the civil rights violation. So the FBI had to take it over to have some justice done in that situation.
Right. Did this happen before or after Trump took office?
It was right after Trump took office.
Yeah.
Yes. It was months after Trump took office, and it was pretty incredible the way that it went down, the circumstances and stuff. I just never thought I'd witness something like that in a sheriff's department, but I did. And, you know, I do want to tell people if they want to learn more about my story and who I am, I'm at McGuffeyforSheriff.com. So, you know, you can look it up. Again, as I said, I didn't try to have this story. It just happens to people. You know, there are other people that have a story, and that's why, because you stand up for what you believe in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you so much. I very much appreciate you coming on the show and telling your story. As I said, it's just incredibly inspiring. And so thank you so much. And I appreciate all your time.
Thank you, Greg.
All right.
Yeah,
take care.
Thanks, bye-bye. Everybody. Okay.
And that's gonna do it for us for the show. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you, or you'll hear from me, next week. Take care.